Master Jabaki. We are up to the 11th class in the course on the Yud Gimel Ikrim, and we are dealing today with the 6th Ikka, prophecy. I propose only to spend one class on this. I propose to spend one class on this, and only one class on this, because really, we are getting into much meatier material. Prophecy is very important for reasons that we'll talk about today, but the 7th, 8th and 9th Ikka is where the Rambam is going to launch into his description of Torah min HaShamayim. And what does it mean that Moshe Rabbeinu was a Navi? What kind of Navi was he, and how did he receive the Torah, and what is the Torah? Really fundamental stuff. Here you are.
Thank you so much.
No problem. Just to give you a sneak preview as to what's coming up, coming soon to a Yud Gimel Ikrim Shir near you, is the Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah, which is the 7th Ikka, Torah min HaShamayim, which is the 8th Ikka. The 9th Ikka is like a smaller one, which is the idea of, does the Torah ever change? Actually, it's not really small, it's actually a very big Ikka. There's less, perhaps, to say about it, but we can make lots to say about it. The 10th Ikka and the 11th Ikka are going to deal with the issues of God's knowledge and the way that God runs the world, if we can understand that at all. And the 12th Ikka is going to deal with Mashiach, and the 13th Ikka will deal with Tchias HaMeisim. So I don't exactly know how many Shirim we're going to give to 7, 8, 9, probably 3 or 4. I expect that we will be dealing with 10 towards Purim time, and then 11, 12, 13 probably after Pesach. Now, be aware that I'm away between Purim and Pesach, so you won't get any shirim from me between Purim and Pesach, but you'll have other delights to experience. Now, the 6th Ikka is prophecy. Let's read the Ikka, and then let's talk a little bit about prophecy. So says the Rambam like this. I quote from number 1. I'm going to read it through in English or Hebrew. Depends on how the mood takes me. What should I do? Hebrew? Okay, well, I'll read it in Hebrew and you can follow along in English. It's Ayisoda Shishi. Hanavuah, which is prophecy. Vuhu. And the Navuah is, the Ikra is like this. Leidash Zeha Min Ha'enoshi. That amongst the human race, Yimtzu by Anoshim, there are certain individuals. Okay? By the way, it's not men. This is a cross-gender issue. Nevuah, we have Nevi'im and Nevi'ot. There are people, Sheyesh Lahem Tvi'im, okay? They Tva'im. They have a certain nature. Mu'ulim, which is elevated, a very developed nature, Ma'oid. V'shleimus Rav, and they have a very large degree of perfection. Okay? V'yichavnu Nafshei Seihem, they are able to focus their spirits, their minds, Ashi Kablu Tsuras HaSeichel, until they are able to receive a higher level of intelligence. The Achakein, and after that, Yidbak Oisa HaSeichel, they can connect that Seichel, Hainoshi, which is human, B'Seichel HaPoel, with the active intellect, which is the intellect coming down from God. We'll talk more about this in a minute. And then a downflow, a divine downflow, can then start connecting with them and flowing down into them. These people are Nevi'im. And that is prophecy. And that is really what it's all about. To explain this issue in great length, he said, would be far too detailed. I'm not going to give you a detailed explanation. Because I'm not trying to bring detailed proofs for every one of the Ikrim. To understand exactly how to understand each Ikra. I'm not giving you a whole lengthy explanation of features there. Because that would require a departure into all areas of wisdom, the totality of wisdoms. Could also be talking about, specifically about Nevuah, to describe Nevuah would involve Klal HaChochmas Kulam, more about that soon. I'm just outlining them in detail, in less detail, in principle, he says, U'psuki HaTorah Me'idim M'Nevuat HaNevi'im Rabbim. And the verses of Tanakh themselves, the verses of the Torah, let us know about the existence of many Nevi'im, and there are many Psukim that deal with Nevi'im, and therefore that's what the Rambam has given us by way of the 6th Ikka, this understanding of prophecy. Now, why does the Rambam include this as one of the Ikra? Why do we need this as one of the fundamental principles of Jewish belief? what's so important about prophecy? So you can give a number of answers to that question. One answer that some people give is, well, this is really a hakdamah, this is really an introduction to the next ikka. The next ikka is Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu really is fundamental to everything. In order to understand Moshe Rabbeinu, which we need to understand Torah, because if we don't understand Torah, then what do we have? In order to understand Moshe Rabbeinu, we have to first understand the basic concepts of Nevuah. Okay, that's one approach, which kind of downplays this ikka and uses it as an instruction. You could say that this ikka is important because a large amount historically of our Torah that we have is based in Nevuah, not the Nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, but the Nevuah of later Nevi'im. We have mitzvahs that come from Nevi'im, the mitzvahs of Onik Shabbos and Kovet Shabbos. There's a whole status of halakha, which is called, let me just get the eraser here, which is called Divrei Kabbalah. Have you ever come across this? Mm-hmm. It's nothing to do with mysticism or Kabbalistic thinking. There's Torah, okay, Divrei Torah. Then there's Divrei, what we call Kabbalah, okay, and then there's Rabbanan. Meaning, Rabbanan comes from the rabbis. We know where they are, who they are. They come later. Divrei Kabbalah come from the prophets, and Divrei Torah come from Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore there are some mitzvahs which have this kind of in-between status, which is almost like a Torah status. It has some kind of mixed elements of both. For example, the mitzvah of Kovet Shabbos, of Onik Shabbos, the mitzvah of reading Megillah. These are mitzvahs which you learn from the Pesukim. And therefore, maybe it's important for us to understand the Nevuah, to understand the nature of those mitzvahs. Also, we said before in our oral law class, many of the mitzvahs de Rabbanon, the Gezeiras and the Takanas de Rabbanon, says the Rambam, are rooted in the Nevuah as well. It was the Nevi'im at the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash that introduced the ideas that we have in rabbinic law as well. And also, even those ideas in the Rabbanons, which are not, if you like, originally from Nevuah, they base them in Pesukim. Look, read the Gemara. The Gemara is full of references to Pesukim. How do we know? This idea, this posuk and this posuk. In Tehillim, in Amos, in Yechezkel, all over Tanakh. Everything pretty much that we do as Jews is rooted somewhere or other in the being. Even Minhagim, which the Jewish people took on themselves later, which don't seem to have any basis. There's an expression in the Gemara, which is, let the Jewish people do it. Why? Im lav Nevi'im heim, even if they're not Nevi'im, b'nei Nevi'im heim. Which we'll see what b'nei Nevi'im means. It doesn't just mean that the children of Nevi'im, it means that they're potential Nevi'im. The Jewish people themselves have a rooted in some kind of Nevi'im. So for us, Nevi'im is very important. And also in terms of epistemology, of understanding how do we know anything. This is a big philosophical question if you're ever a student of philosophy. How do we know anything? Where does that knowledge come from? Is it based on reason? Is it innately tuned into our brain? Like Descartes might have said, that there are some things which we are innately born with an understanding of. Is it just socialized? Do we just pick it up from other people, as later philosophers would have said, people like Hume? Yeah? Or do we get our knowledge from some kind of outside source, from revelation? And I think the Rambam is saying that obviously he's not discounting the first two sources of knowledge, but he's saying as Jews, one of the fundamental principles of our understanding is that we can connect with God. Not just Moshe Rabbeinu, but other people. You and me can connect with God, perhaps, maybe, and be Nevi'im. We'll see if that's possible. And therefore you can plug into a higher source of knowledge. And this is really fundamental. How do you know that you've got it right? How do you know that it's real? Okay, that's a different question. There are checks and balances. But the concept that you can plug into something outside the system is really critical for us because revelation is really at the heart of many of the things that we do and many of the things that we know. And that brings me to the last point, which is, why is this important? Because it could also be the Rambam is saying that Nevuah as Nevuah, leaving aside historical realities and leaving aside Moshe Rabbeinu, Nevuah in and of itself is a goal for every man and woman, certainly every Jewish man and woman, and maybe every human being. And he's going to describe what Nevuah is, and you'll see that there's no reason in principle why we can't have Nevi'im today, it seems, according to the Rambam. And there's no reason why we shouldn't aspire to have Nevi'im today. It may be that we don't succeed, but as an aspirational mitzvah, maybe this is something that's very important too. So, with that introduction, let's have a look, please, at source number two. Source number two is the Rambam in Moreh Nevuchim that seeks to try and describe how Nevuah works. So let's have a look in number two. He says like this, I'll read to start with, and later on I'll get you to read a little bit. The existence of actions are purely incorporeal beings. In every case of change that doesn't originate in the mere combination of elements, is now firmly established. In other words, he says that there are certain things that come from physical beings, some things that come from non-physical beings. Now, when it comes to physical actions, we understand how they work. They, you know, derive from actions and reactions, etc. But when it comes to incorporeal beings, things that don't have physical form, how do they act on anything else? It's not like billiard balls. You know, with billiard balls or whatever you call them in America, snooker, I don't know what you call it, billiard, what do you call it? Pool balls, yeah? You can bang one ball and it bangs another ball and, oh, I can see how mechanistically things bang each other. But something which is incorporeal, how can that affect something which is physical? He says, these actions don't depend on impact or on distance. In other words, it doesn't matter how far you are away because you're talking about a non-physical thing. They are termed influence, in Hebrew, shefa. Okay? Shefa. Although this is not a translation of the Hebrew, because as you know, Mor Nevuchim was written in?
Arabic.
Fine. On account of their similarity to a water spring, the word shefa is just like a mashal, it's a parable for, it's a metaphor for this idea, because it's like a water spring. Now, how does a water spring work? The latter sends forth water in all directions, has no peculiar side for receiving or spending its contents. It springs forth on all sides, continually waters both neighboring and distant places. You have this image of a water spring, overflowing and just flowing out in all directions until everything eventually is covered in this water. In a similar manner, incorporeal beings, in receiving power and imparting it to others, are not limited to a particular side, distance, or time, because they're beyond physical properties. They act continually, and whether an object is sufficiently prepared, it receives the effect of that continuous action called shefa, called influence. Now, he's going to talk about nevuah. God being incorporeal, and everything being the work of him as the efficient cause, that was the first ikkar, everything ultimately comes from God and from nowhere else, we say that the universe has been created by divine influence. How did God create a physical thing? So the Rambam says that God thinks a thought, and the thought thinks a thought, and that thought thinks a thought, and that thought thinks a thought of a thought of a thought of a thought, and eventually there's some kind of downflow system which eventually ends in that influencing the physical world. And he says, and all the changes in the universe emanates from him. In the same sense, we say that he caused wisdom to emanate from him and to come upon the prophets. In all such cases, we merely miss to express that the incorporeal being whose action we call Shefa has produced a certain effect. The term influence has been considerably applied to the Creator on account of the similarity between his actions and those of a spring. He says, there is no better way of describing the action of incorporeal being than this analogy. And no term can be found that would accurately describe it. For it is as difficult to form an idea of that action as to form an idea of the incorporeal being itself. Can you imagine something which is non-physical? You can't. Everything, all the terms of reference you have in your brain are reference to physical things. As we imagine only bodies or forces residing in bodies, so we imagine any actions possible where an agent is near, or at a certain distance, or on a particular side. There are therefore persons who, on learning that God is incorporeal, or that he doesn't approach the object of his action, they believe that he gives commands to angels. We say things like, God told a malach to do this. But of course that's really not what's happening. But that's the best way we can describe this idea of God just kind of overflowing into the world. The malach, therefore, is not some kind of winged messenger. The malach is the effect of God's thoughts, if you like, permeating into the world. And the latter carry them out to approach or by approach of direct contact, as is the case when we produce something. We think of malachim in a physical way, because that's the only way we can think about them. But when we talk about malachim in the Torah, we talk about people talking to malachim, people eating with malachim, people touching malachim. Or that's not real. That can't be physically happening. Because what is the malach? The malach is an emanation from God's thought and wisdom. That's why the Rambam, when he goes through the Chumash and he looks at all the situations in which people talk to Malachim, he says, this is not happening in real time. There's no guy sitting down in Avraham Avinu's tent eating dinner. Because a Malach, how can a thought emanating from God eat dinner? It's almost as silly as that. Thoughts can't eat dinner, so Malachim can't eat dinner. And therefore, they all mean something different. Every time you see in Tanakh any reference to somebody having an interaction with a Malach, It doesn't mean it's happening in a physical way. It's happening in a nevuah. It's happening in a non-physical way. Of course, there are others that deny the way of approach to Chumash. The Ramban is very unhappy with it. We've talked about it on other occasions. I'm not going to talk about it now, but now you can hopefully understand from the Ramban why he says that. He's not just saying that because he wants to be ever so controversial. He's saying that because when he sees the word Malach written in the Chumash, it's ridiculous to suggest that that's like a, you know, fluffy wing white thing with a cherub and a halo, whatever it is. Right. It's very difficult, by the way, when you're dealing with people for whom the word angel can't help but conjure up that image of a white, fluffy Christmas tree thing. It's very hard to get them to undo that baggage. And unless, of course, they're American or English-speaking, where you can say, forget about angels. Angels are white, fluffy things. Malach, a malach is a non-physical emanation of God's thought. Then at least you can say, forget about angel, call it a malach. The problem you've got with modern Hebrew, of course, is that in Israeli secular culture, the word malach is now itself tainted with the same nonsense of the white Christmas angel on the Christmas tree. And therefore that's one of the reasons why people were very against modern Hebrew, originally, a battle which was fought and lost almost entirely, okay? Because they were worried about modern Hebrew, about Hebrew words being themselves tainted with the same shtuyot, the same nonsense, and that in fact is what happened. What's that? Call it a saraf. But, you know, a saraf is a certain kind of malach. Serafim, ofanim, chayot hakodesh. We have all sorts of names for different malachim. But even the word saraf in modern Hebrew, what does that mean? You're on his word. I say the word saraf to you. What do you think? Something burning? Yeah. Something burns. Not sure that helps as much. Anyway, let's go on. Okay, fine. Let's just go on and finish this. He says, these persons thus imagine also the angels as bodies. Don't worry about that. Okay. Some of them further believe that, listen to this, that God commands an action in words, consisting, like ours, of letters and sounds, and that thereby the action is done. Some people can even believe that God speaks to people. How ridiculous. That there are words, that God speaks using words. We have to use the expression dibur because we don't have any better way of saying it. But there's no words and there are no sounds. This is not what's happening. Now, today, in our 21st century world, we actually have some better, I think, analogies for understanding the download of information. You and I know that in this room, in the air right now, are billions and zillions of gigabytes of information flying through our bodies all the time. We know that that's happening. And all you need is a receiver, some computer that can pick that up, and you can download almost every piece of information in the world because it's all flying through the air right now. If you think about it, that is the most incredible idea. You can't see it, you can't feel it, but you know it's there. You just have to have the receiver and you can pick up anything from anywhere. And we are actually perhaps more familiar with that. Maybe we call this now a download or, you know, Wi-Fi or something like this. And I'm sure in 100 years I'll have something else which is even more helpful. But this at least is something we can connect a little bit with. But we call it words. Some people call it words, and that thereby the action is done. All of this is the work of the imagination. So none of this is real. People just make this up, this stuff about white fluffy angels and words, which is in fact identical with the Yetzer Hara. It's just Yetzer Hara. It's not real. For all our defects in speech or character, either direct or indirect, work of the imagination. So he says, when you're talking about this, you have to get a bit more abstract. You have to break out of the physical constraints that we have. Now, if you can imagine, it works very like prayer. It builds in many ways on the last ikka, which was tefillah, which was prayer. In the sense, oh dear, someone's written in some nasty red pen here. So he says, you can imagine there's this like source which is flowing in all directions, okay? Which is coming out in this kind of downflow, which is everywhere, all around us. What's the word? Isotropic? Something like that. It's like the background radiation of the Big Bang or something like that. It's everywhere around us. And little you, okay, is sitting there, okay, like this, trying to connect in. And this, if you like, the line at which
this is capable of being tuned into is what we call the active intellect. Okay? Meaning, this is the point at which if you raise yourself, you can actually make contact there.
And then you can begin to download what you need to download. And that's what we mean by the activator. The active intellect is not God, but it is the point of the downflow of the Shefa.
This is all Shefa, okay? At which you can actually connect it.
And then you can pick up and pick up the information, and that's what we call Nevuah. Now, for you to do that requires an enormous amount of personal preparation, a little bit like we said with Tefillah, but even more so for Nevuah. Yeah?
How can we turn God's communication into a formula?
Into a what?
Into a formula. To be like, do X, and then you'll see Y, and then...
We'll see. That's exactly what the Rambam does. We'll see in a minute how that works. Actually, maybe let's see that now. Now you mentioned it, Marie. Go to page 3. Maybe someone else can read, give my voice a rest. Casey, you want to read?
Sure.
So this is also from the Moreh Nevuah in describing how we have actually understood Nevuah.
There are many different opinions concerning prophecy as concerning the eternity or non-eternity of the universe.
Now, if you want to know what that means, tune into the fourth Ikkah. We talked about that at length. As to Rambam's correlation between Nevuah and the way that the world was created. I'm not going to get into that now. It's in Shir 7, 8, something like that. Carry on.
For we have shown that those who assume the existence of God as proved may be divided into three classes, according to the view they take of the question whether the universe is eternal or not. Similarly, there are three different opinions on prophecy. One, among those who believe in prophecy, and even among our co-religion...
I mean, is there even Jews that believe this? Can you believe it, says the Rambam? But there are.
There are some ignorant people who think as follows. God selects any person he pleases, inspires him with the spirit of prophecy, and entrusts him with a mission. It makes no difference whether that person be wise or stupid, old or young, provided he be, to some extent, morally good. For these people have not yet gone so far as to maintain that God might also inspire a wicked person with his spirit. They admit that this is impossible, unless God has previously caused him to improve his ways.
The first view of prophecy, he said, which a lot of people feel is true, even Jewish people, is that God speaks to people. They're nice people, morally good people, but they're not especially, developed intellectually. And one day they're walking down the street and they hear this voice in their head, and God's giving them a message. I think that's probably how most people understand the Nevuah, actually, if you speak to them. That one day people just pick this message up and someone says, Moshe, Moshe. Yeah? That, says the Rambam, is ridiculous. That God just zaps information into people's minds. And they didn't do anything to deserve it, they just get it. So that is completely disregards that opinion. Yes?
What are the prophets who, when you read, are destined to be prophets from a young age?
Who's that? Like who?
Like Moshe.
No, Moshe is not destined for anything.
Shimshon,
first of all, it's not clear that Shimshon was a Navi. Shimshon doesn't get God speaking to him saying, Shimshon, go here, do this, do that. Shimshon's actions are much more a kind of, bell ringing in his head, as it's described, some kind of ruach that rests on him, that gives him some idea to do something. It may not be necessarily a Nevuah, it may be a lower form of Nevuah. So, but there was nothing destined about. The Shimshon was destined to be a Moshiach, to be someone who could save the Jewish people. But I'm not sure it says that anyone's destined to be a prophet. How can you be destined to be a prophet? Does it say, it's interesting, does it say anywhere in Chumash that someone's going to have a child and he will be a prophet? I'm not sure. I can't think of anywhere where it says that. Doesn't mean that I know everything, but I can't think of anywhere it says. You could say he's destined to be an important person, but then he can choose, because you'll see the Rambam says prophecy depends on what you choose in life. No one can influence the choices you make, but they can influence them, you can understand them. You had a question, Mary? Rivka, someone had a question?
No.
Shmuel was just given over to be a worker in the Beit HaMikdash to serve Eliyahu Kohen, to be a good boy and to grow up and be a servant for Klal Yisrael. At a certain point in his developments, certainly he starts getting this Nevuah. And the Rambam will say, it wasn't just some random, some kid, 7-year-old kid. Sometimes we read the story, we think that, Shmuel's some little kid lying in bed, and all of a sudden this voice comes in his head, and he runs into Eli and says, what do you want?
Yeah.
The Rambam, I think, will understand it a little differently. That Shmuel is a young person who's developed his brain and his intellect, and reached a certain point at which he's able to get the Nevuah.
What about
who?
King David? Like
King David wasn't that big,
from,
sure.
Like, a very young age?
To be the melech.
Oh, true. Okay.
To be a melech. A melech is a leader. You don't need to be a novice to be a melech. You need to have certain other qualities. Yes.
In terms of Moshe Rabbeinu, though, he was definitely destined for, even from when he was born. There was a light that emanated from him.
Okay. There was potential in Moshe
Rabbeinu.
Right. It took a long time for it to come to light.
But wasn't it also one of the reasons, one of the commentaries that one of the reasons he couldn't breastfeed from a secular woman was because, like, he knew he would be somewhat, or he would be receiving Nevuah?
Okay, so it's a good question. The mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu that would give over the Torah had to, you know, feed from a Jewish nurse. You have to understand what that medrash means. And number two, I'm not sure the Rambam is obliged to agree with that medrash. Even if you turn around and say that medrash says that he was destined for Nevuah, and that's a contradiction to the Rambam won't have any problem with that. The Rambam doesn't have to fit in with every medrash.
Well,
we're learning the Mandarin,
if he's making a point that directly contradicts what he's saying, then he does have.
No, he doesn't. He's absolutely not obliged to do that. The Rambam, on many occasions, and not just the Rambam, but everybody can say this is a certain view, but we don't follow this view.
Also, the medrash, like...
Again, there's two levels to this. Number one, we have to understand what this medrash really means. And even if we conclude that it really means that people are destined to Nevuah, the Rambam's not really bothered by the medrash. The Rambam doesn't have to fit in with everything. There are Gemaras, the Rambam says, we don't follow that. There are Gemaras about astrology that take astrology very seriously. The Rambam just says, we don't follow those Gemaras. You don't have to make... I know in this current climate in the world we live in, it seems like almost an obsession that everything has to fit with everything else. But that's not true of Torah. Not everything has to fit with everything. Certainly not in Midrashim. Okay? Depends on how you learn where the Midrashim came from as well, which is an interesting question. But that's not for now. Now, Vita, Katie, please. So that's the first approach which we reject.
Okay. Two, the philosophers hold that prophecy is a certain faculty of man in a state of perfection, which can only be obtained by study. Although the faculty is common to the whole race, yet it is not fully developed in each individual, either on the account of the individual's defective constitution or on account of some other external cause.
In other words, everybody has the potential to be a novi, but some people don't make it because, you know, they just didn't, you know, get the right education, or they're too interested in something else, and they just distract them.
This is the case with every faculty common to a class. It is only brought to a state of perfection in some individuals and not in all. But it is impossible that it should not be perfect in some individual of the class.
In other words, some people get double honors from Harvard. Some people make it, and they get that, and they achieve that. Those people do. Many people could do, but they just don't do for other reasons.
And if the perfection is of such a nature that it can only be produced by an agent, such an agent must exist. Accordingly, it is impossible that an ignorant person should be a prophet, or that a person being no prophet in the evening should unexpectedly on the following morning find himself a prophet, as if prophecy were a thing that could be found unintentionally.
You can't wake up at breakfast and find you're a novi. So that's not how it works. It doesn't work that way. Carry on. But if a person
perfect in his intellect and moral faculties, and also perfect as far as possible in his imaginative faculty, prepares himself in the manner which will be described, he must become a prophet, for prophecy is a natural faculty of man. It is impossible that a man who has the capacity for prophecy should prepare himself for it without attaining it. Just as it is impossible that a person with a healthy constitution should be fed well and that yet not properly assimilate his food and the like.
So the Rambam says, this is not our view, this is the view of the philosophers, which is prophecy is 100% natural, naturalistic. It is not coming from God in any sense, in the sense that God is choosing the prophet. God is everywhere. God is giving the shefa, or the wisdom. Not God is everywhere, but God is producing a, you know, Wi-Fi system, which is everywhere. And if you have the right receiver, it's not possible that you can't be another. It's not possible. Any more than saying, like, if you have a computer which has the right Wi-Fi settings and you've switched it on, it's just not possible that it won't pick up the Wi-Fi. It can't not. How can it not? The computer can't decide not to. The Wi-Fi can't say, I don't like this computer, I'm not going to speak to it. It feels that way sometimes. But it's because there's something wrong with the computer, something wrong with the receiver. But that's not our view. What's our view is the third view. Carry on, Katie.
The third view is that which is taught in Scripture, and which forms one of the principles of our religion.
Oh, this is the sixth echo. Carry on.
It coincides with the opinion of the philosophers in all points except one. For we believe that even if one has the capacity for prophecy and has duly prepared himself, it may yet happen that he does not actually prophesy.
Prophesy, I think you should.
Prophesy. It is in that case it is in that case the will of God that withholds from him the use of the faculty.
In other words, he says like this, our view is exactly the same as the philosopher's, in the sense that you can make it to the act of intellect, and when you plug in, you will receive prophecy, except for, I've got a sparrow who can turn off the taps. He can turn off the faucet, and then you won't get the prophecy. Not because you're not on the level, but because, for whatever reason, it has been decided that you cannot or you shouldn't get a prophecy. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is part of the process, but he can't pull you up. But he can turn off the taps there. This is fundamental to the Rambam in many places. God doesn't change people. God doesn't change people. Like at the beginning of the Shalach, when it says, why didn't the Jewish people go through directly to Israel out of Egypt? Okay? Next week's Parsha. Why did they not go through? Why did they have to go through the long way? Because they would have got scared, they would have been frightened, they would have turned back. So God should change them. God should make them brave. Make them not frightened. It doesn't work that way. God doesn't change people. People have to change themselves. People, when they change themselves, they get Siyata Shemaya. God can help them along a certain path to change themselves. Absolutely. That's fundamental. But they have to put in the effort and do the work. Now, he says the same thing here. What you can, Miri, this is your question. It is really a natural process. God doesn't zap someone like from out of nowhere. They are tuning into a shepherd, and then they can pick up the book. Now, what the Rambam is now going to describe to us in Halacha, by the way, and this is in Halacha, this is no longer in philosophy, this is in Mishnah Torah, the Rambam decides to dedicate 5 or 6 major Halachas as to how to become a Novi. And the fact that the Rambam includes them in Halacha, okay, the Mishnah Torah is not meant to be practical halacha for all times, because it includes everything, even stuff like the Korbanos, etc. But the fact that he has halachas of how to become a Novi is very fundamental. Turn to page 2, please. And for the rest of the class, for the next 20 minutes or so, I'd like to explore with you a little bit what it means to become a Novi. So look at the Pesukim first. The Pesukim in the Torah say like this, Ki agoyim ha'ele asher ata yoresh oisa. These nations that you're going to conquer, El Ma'inim ve El Kaisimim Yishmu. They listen to soothsayers, magicians. They are, what's the word?
Magicians.
No. My mind has gone blank. Superstitious. They do irrational and strange things because that's how they believe. They don't have 13 floors in a building. You know, I grew up in a city that didn't have any number 13 in the street. You know? They don't have number 13s on the planes, on the seats, and because people say it's bad luck, like the whole plane is not going to crash, but seat row 13 is going to crash, whatever. God doesn't want you to be like that, says the Pasuk. It's a Pesukim from Devarim. Ah, so how are you going to connect? How are you going to know what to do and what not to do? Novi mikir b'chamei achecha k'moini yakim l'cha Hashem l'kecha. God will give you a Novi. A lav tishma'u. Listen to that Novi. K'chala she'sha'al tami im Hashem. Just like you yourselves asked from God. Elokecha b'chayrev at Sinai. But Yama Kahal, when we all gather together, Leimor, and you said, Lo yaseif l'shmoyel et kol Hashem elokai. I don't want to listen to God anymore. The Jewish people had a direct relationship with God, and they said, too much, we can't do that anymore. Ve'es ha'esh ha'gdoyla ha'zois, lo yare'oid, v'lo yamos, I'm frightened, I'm scared to connect directly with God. V'yom ha'ashem elai, and God said to me, says Moshe, Hitivu asher diberu, they've asked, well, this is a good thing that they said. Navi akim lahem mikerev acheichem, kamoicha, I will give them a prophet like you, you're a prophet. V'nasati, or they will see that Moshe's nevuah works on different levels. V'nasati divarai b'piv, I will put my word in the mouth of the prophet. V'diber aleihem es kol asher atzavenu, and through the prophet they will know what I want people to do. V'haya ish asher lo yishma, el divarai asher yidaber b'shmi. And if someone doesn't listen to what I tell them to do through the prophet, I will punish them. The Rambam here doesn't give us a description as to how you know who's a real prophet, but he does elsewhere. In the introduction to the Mishnah, which I haven't given you here, the Rambam has about 10 pages on how you tell who is a real prophet, who is not. Anyone can turn around and say, I'm tuned into the Shepherd. Listen to me. How do you know they're right? There may just be some crank that walks out of a cave that says that God's speaking to them. And therefore there is a whole system in place to differentiate between real prophets, people who are not real prophets, etc. And I'm not going to get into that now, but just rest assured that that exists and that's there. The Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah deals with the following. And I'm going to bring you here six halachas. We'll look at them, we'll think about them, and then that'll hopefully give us a really good understanding of Nevuah to take us forward to the next ikka. This is number four. Nimsei Sa'omer. We can therefore say, Shekol Navi Shiyamod Acha Moshe Rabbeinu, every Navi that came after Moshe Rabbeinu, Ein Anu Ma'aminim Loi Boi Mipnei Ha'os Levadoi. We don't believe him just because he does a miracle. It may be that we need a Navi to do some kind of sign to prove that he's a Navi, but that's not why we believe him. Or her. Kadesh Noima, as if we were going to say, Im Yasa Ois Nishmaloi. If he does a wonder, we'll believe him. L'chol Mashi Yoma. This is a very non-Jewish idea. You do a miracle, you walk on the water, you do this, you do that. Oh, that's impressive. We're not impressed by miracles. We don't, that doesn't do it for us. Ela Rav Mitnei HaMitzvah Shetzivanu Moshe B'Torah. The authority of the Navi is because the mitzvah in the Torah tells us to listen to the Navi. Not because they can do miracles. But Amar im nasan ois, and if he does prove himself to be a Navi through a miracle, Elav Tishma'un, there's the passage that says we have to listen to him. K'moshe Tzivanu Lachtocha Davar Al Pi Shnei Edim, just like the Torah says, we listen to two witnesses. Think about it. There's a criminal case or a civil case, and somebody comes and gives evidence. One witness, we're not going to listen to you. Two witnesses, we are going to listen to you. Like, how random is that? Why? Why should two witnesses be right and one witness be wrong? Maybe the one witness is right and the two witnesses are wrong. Just because there are two people, it means they're right. Two people can also get it wrong, no? So why do we believe two witnesses? It's a bit simple as that. Because the Torah says, two witnesses believe, one witness don't believe. Yeah, okay, it's logical that if two witnesses say the same thing, that's more reliable than one. But why not three, or nine, or 25, or 78? The Torah says two. We go, and by the way, big things can be determined by that. Lots of very serious matters. It's a mitzvah. Even though we don't know if they're giving the true testimony, im sheker, or false, kach mitzvah, we still believe them. Kach mitzvah lishmo mizeh anavi. Similarly, it's a mitzvah to listen to the Navi, im ha'ois emes, oy bekishav balat. Okay, whether the sign is true, or whether it's done some magical way, the point is that once they're able to give a sign, then we can believe them. Okay? And therefore, the authority of the Navi is the authority of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's really very important. It's the authority of the Torah itself. That's why their words have... If you think about it, therefore, everything gets traced back to a Navi, to the Torah. Let's say the Gemara says, why do we do this? Because there's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says this. So why should I listen to Yeshaya? Because Yeshaya is a bona fide Navi, and he says in the Torah to listen to Yeshaya. So ultimately, everything is linked back. There's a system that roots it all in what? In Torah Min HaShamayim. That's really critical. It's not just coming from people. Every religion has prophets, or people claim that they're prophets. People who say God spoke to me, and we should all do this now. As thinking people, we have to be able to decide. Why should I listen to this one and not that one? Why should I listen to Moshe and not Muhammad? Why should I listen to Muhammad and not Joseph Smith, or whatever his name was, or Ban Ki Moon? Not Ban Ki Moon. Ban Ki Moon's the guy the United Nations. Reverend Moon, yeah, who started the Moonies. Well, everybody says that God spoke to them. We have to be able to work out who we do believe and who we don't believe, and therefore he says it's the authority of the Torah, not the authority of the prophet. Now, look at number five. We're now going to have five halachas from chapter 7 of Yesodei HaTorah. He's going to describe how to be a Navi. Yesodei HaTorah, one of the fundamentals of our religion is, later, that we should have to know, Shehakel Menaveh Estimei Adam, that God can communicate through Nevuah with people. I nearly said God can speak to people, but I stopped myself just in time. That God can communicate through Nevuah with people. The Eina Nevuah Chala Ela Al Chochem Gadol Chochem. Now, who gets Nevuah? You have to be a very wise person. Gibur B'Midosah. You have to be extremely self-controlled. You have to be able to be a Bal Midas. Lo Yihye Yitzro Mit Gaber Alav. You can't be someone whose Yetzer Hara is constantly getting one over you. No, someone who gets angry, or someone who has a taiva, something like that. B'davar ha'olam, in all matters of the world. Elohu mitzgaba b'dasa, but you're in charge of your own mind. Al yitzro tamid, and you're in charge of your impulses, a natural person. Baldea, rechava, you're very broad-minded. l'chayna amayit, and you have a very clear understanding of what you know. Adam shehu memule b'chala midas ha'elo, somebody who has all of those characteristics, shalim begufay, and they have a physical health, k'shi yikanis l'paradis, when they enter the paradis, what's the paradis? The orchard. What does the Rambam mean by the paradis?
The different.
What? Yeah, the paradis for him, not just Pshat Rimit Drashsov, that's like more of a kind of a, an acronym. The paradis often is used to mean the, you know, the world of Kabbalah, of mysticism. The Rambam doesn't use the paradis like that. For the Rambam, the world, the paradis means the world of philosophy and metaphysics. When he's able to enter that world of understanding why things are as they are, and he's drawn after these deep deep and powerful ideas, and he has a clear mind to understand them, and he's able to separate himself from the nonsense of the world. People who spend their whole time doing nonsense, you know, he's not going to be interested in the next episode of Friends or whatever it is. He's not going to be saying, you know, what's happening in less than the other. Okay? Because he's going to be like, you know, like, that's not relevant to me. V'hoylech mezareis atzmai umelamdoi umelamid nafshoi shaloiti eloi machshava klal ve'echem edvarim betelim. And he can control, his mind control is so significant that he can block out stuff which is disturbing. We're talking about a fairly advanced individual here. And he can get away from all of the nonsense of the day. His brain is constantly open to the above. One wonders whether one would want to be friends with this person, actually. It's very interesting. Like, what kind of, can you be this kind of a person and also be really normal and natural and relaxed and, you know? I don't know. That's a good question. And your brain, your mind is now connected and tied under the heavenly throne. And you can pick up all this, you know, these images. And you can, like, tap into the wisdom of Hashem. Immediately, Ruach HaKodesh will fall on him. Once you've checked all those boxes, you're an incredible chacham and you're a Baal Midas and your brain is detached from other things and you're open and blah, blah, blah. Then at a certain point something goes ping and you're online. Okay? Now, what happens when you go online is actually very interesting.
Wait, online to Ruach
HaKodesh? Yeah, on right across. We're not talking about Ruach HaKodesh. Ruach HaKodesh is a word which is often used for much more of a, like, a lower level inspiration, like, you know, God guiding my decisions in some way. They say the Chachamim have, like, Ruach HaKodesh, but not Nevuah. Nevuah is a whole different level from Ruach HaKodesh. Ube Eisha, yes, Hada.
But what did Bilam?
Oh, that's a good question.
I doubt he had.
Yeah, Bilam doesn't sound like a person who had built himself to that level. You asked this question last time, didn't you? Someone asked this question last time about Bilam. And I said I would try and tell you, work out what the Rambam has to say about Bilam. I don't know what the Rambam says about Bilam. He doesn't sound like he's talking about Jews. There's nothing that he said so far that seems to limit this to Jews. Although, I'm not going to say definitively he's talking about everybody. I don't know how the Rambam understands Bilam. I need to check out what the Rambam says about Bilam. Because Bilam clearly has some kind of a level of Nevuah. The question is he, did he have Nevuah on this level? When God speaks to the Bilam, is he speaking to them on a level? Did Bilam tap into the Shefa like this? Or is Bilam doing something else? I don't know, and I need to find out.
Is he called?
He calls himself lots of things. Okay? But he calls himself lots of things which are not true. He says, you know, he knows the Das Keller, Elion, he knows the mind of God. And Chazal almost kind of laugh at this because they, you know, imagine the picture there. He's smacking his donkey because he doesn't know what's going on. He describes himself as a person who taps into, you know, the mind of God, and he doesn't even know why his donkey's crouching down on the floor. Bilam is projected as, in the Psukim, forget about Chazal, in the Psukim, Bilam is projected as a bit of a pathetic character in some ways. So I don't know whether the Rambam says that he's a real bona fide Navi or not. Need to check it out. Yeah.
Why does the, like, qualifications to become a Navi keep mentioning, like, a physical health, if, like, being a Navi is so spiritual?
Because the Rambam describes the Mor Nevuchim that an essential prerequisite for spiritual health is physical health. Because physical ill health will distract you mentally from being able to do what you need to do. It's the same thing with financial health. Why do we gather for financial security in the Shema? You know, we want rain and we want food and we want sheep and we want all this kind of stuff. What does that achieve? It achieves at the Rambam one thing and one thing only. It allows us to relax and not worry about money. And because if we're worrying about money, then how can we do this? It's the same thing with health. As you well know, if you feel ill, you can't concentrate. People who are sick don't just lay in bed doing PhDs. You kind of think to yourself, oh, if I get sick, then I'll be able to catch up on this. It doesn't work that way, does it? You don't want to do anything when you're sick. You just want to lie there and that's why. You have to be healthy in order to be able to, you know, healthy body, healthy mind. You know, the Rambam is going to say that very much too. And he says it clearly. He talks about four levels of perfection. Physical perfection, financial perfection, ethical perfection, and intellectual perfection. And they build on each other. Yeah.
Does the Rambam or anybody else talk about the steps or tools that people would use to get to those levels?
Yes, and he's going to talk about that in 2 minutes. Let's carry on. Because I've got 10 minutes, I need to use them all. So the second line down from the bottom of number 5. Okay, the minute that he goes online and the spirit rests on him, his nefesh, his soul, will immediately become intertwined with the lowest level of malachim, which are called ishim. The Rambam talks about 10 levels of malachim. This is not Kabbalistic, this is basic Jewish spiritual awareness. Because now what's happening is he's connected with a malach. What does he mean he's connected with a malach? It doesn't mean that they're now like malachim surrounding him, speaking to him. It means he's now online. That's what the malachim are. The malachim are this influence that's coming out of God's, you know, source. The yahafech le'ishacher, he becomes like a different person. The yavin b'dasa she'enu kamo shehaya, he now understands with a completely different understanding. Okay, Elishin is Ale Amala Shar Bnei Adam Lachachom. He's now much higher than all other people who are wise. So much name on the Shaul. When it says about Shaul, the Hiknabita Imam, you will be able to get Nevuah. He told the Nefachta Leishachen, you'll become a different person. Now, number 6, Hanavim Malas Malas Hay. But there are different levels of Nevim. It's not all or nothing. Kamoshi Yesh B'Chachma Chacham Gadol Nechavera. Just like there are different levels of wisdom. Not everyone's as intelligent as everyone else. You can have one Navi bigger than another Navi. But they, one thing they all have is that they only ever see God in a dream or in a vision by night. Or beyom, or if they're by day, they have to first pass out. They have to first lose consciousness. It's some kind of tardema, some kind of sleep, or like almost like coma, has to fall on them. And he brings a proof. Kamoshen Emma, it talks about Avram Avinu, who was of course a Navi.
I thought I asked you this last week, and you said, because I said that they only get prophecies like when they're sleeping. I know it's not, you're saying they could also pass out, but I thought you said that it's not a dream.
It's not like I dreamt something. Dreaming is not Nevuah.
Okay.
Dreaming is the use, is the working of the brain in a certain way that it's kind of, you know, sparking off itself in different ways. But you're not connected with anything. Dreaming is all internal.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Maybe there are certain dreams on a Kabbalistic level that can connect in some way, but I'm not sure the Rambam agrees with that.
Uh-huh.
But here he's talking about something which is much deeper than just having a dream.
It is when you're sleeping.
It's when you are not conscious.
Not conscious.
He says, and he brings a pasuk. But Mare Elav Esvadah, B'chalom Adav Erbor, I will speak to them in a dream, talking about Nevuah. This is where Miriam criticizes Moshe Rabbeinu. Remember the whole story? Miriam criticizes Moshe Rabbeinu and says, I don't understand why Moshe can't have a family life with Zipporah, because I'm a Nevi'ah, and I have a family life, I've got a husband, I've got kids, and Moshe, and God, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, suddenly appears to Miriam and Aaron and Moshe, and of course, that incredible voltage going through them just completely knocks them out. And Moshe Rabbeinu is ready for it because he's online. And you can be online and all of a sudden 20 gigabytes come through and you're ready, you're online. But Miriam's not at all ready. And God explains to her that when you have a Nevuah, you're just like a normal Navi. You have a Nevuah at night time or in this kind of dream state or in this kind of non-conscious state, I should say. But that's not what Moshe Rabbeinu has. He has a whole different... Moshe Rabbeinu has nothing in common with his level of Nebuah at all. We'll see in the next session that this is not what happens to Moshe Rabbeinu. But Kulan Kishmit Nabim, whenever they have a Nebuah, all these people, a normal Navi, Eva Rehem Mizdazim, they start to tremble. V'koyach haguf koshel, and their physical body collapses. The eshtenoisehem metarfois v'tisha'er hadeya pnuya, everything else about them, their mind is kind of just blanked out, and it only remains open lahavin mashitira to be able to receive the prophecy. K'moshe na'am Abraham, it says about Avraham Avinu, v'hine eimach hashecha gedoyle noferes alav, a very deep dread fell on him. That's because he was about to have a nevuah. K'moshe na'am b'Daniel, it brings with pasukim with Daniel as well. Day number 7, he says that nevuah always comes with an image. It's always through some kind of imaginative part of the brain. Look at number 7. Advarim shemoidim lenavi b'mareh hanavua. When you see things through another nevuah, derech mashal modim. They're always through some kind of parable or image. Umiyad yechakek beliboi, and imprinted on the novi's mind is pitron hamashal, is the explanation of what the mashal means. B'mareh hanavua, that he saw in the nevuah. V'yeda mahu, and he knows what it is. K'moy hasunim shera Yaakov Avinu. Remember Yaakov Avinu? Ladder? It's a nevuah. He's an ordinary Navi, and he sees a ladder. Umalachim olim v'yoredim bo. Malachim going up and down. That's an image. V'hu haya mashal l'malchiyot. It was a mashal for the different kingships and the kingdoms and the people who would control Klal Yisrael. V'shibudam and the golas. U'kamor achayas shera Yecheskel, just like what Yecheskel saw with these beings, these chayot. V'hase hanafuach, mekel, and he goes through all of these, umakel, shaked, all the different Nevi'im, some of them saw very kind of vivid things, some of them saw menorahs, some of them saw sticks and stones, they saw all sorts of things. Each of these is an image. Moshe Rabbeinu, he's going to tell you next week, the next Nikkur is going to describe the difference between this and Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't see images. Moshe Rabbeinu saw intellectual clarity. It's a different part of the brain. A different part of Moshe Rabbeinu's brain was supercharged when it comes to his Nevuah from what we're describing here. Okay? Now, your question, someone's question, as to how do you get yourself in the right mood? Look at number 8. Kol hanaviim ein mitnabim b'chol eish yiltzu. You can't become a Navi just whenever you feel like it. Ela mechavnin da'asam, you have to get yourself in the right mood. V'yoshvin tzmeichim, you have to sit happy. You have to be happy. V'tay v'leiv, u'mitzbaydedim, you have to be relaxed, and you have to be contemplative. In other words, when the Nevuah hits you, you collapse into a little heap on the floor and start shaking and, you know, stuff. But before this happens, you have to be fit, healthy, relaxed, in a good mood. Yeah. Why is it that Yitzchak asks Yaakov, Esav, to make him food, nice food that he likes, before he gives him a brocha?
He needs to be ready for it.
He needs to get himself in the right mood to give this brocha. She'en Nevuah Shari Lo Mitach Atzvus. You can't be a Navi if you're sad, if you're depressed, or if you're kind of lethargic or lazy. And you have to be happy. Simcha is critical. The Pikach B'nei Nevi'im, and therefore the B'nei Nevi'im, who are trainee Nevi'im, they're not the children, they're trainee Nevi'im. They were Nevi'im schools. Lifnehem, they always had in front of them Nevel V'tayt, Chalel V'kinor, music. They had people playing music. If you think about it, most people didn't have music most of the time. They lived their lives entirely without music. We are so addicted to music today because we have it on tap everywhere. But most normal people only had music if they were live musicians. And who could afford to employ live musicians? Like the king had like these troubadours or whatever going around playing the lute or something like that. If you were an ordinary Joe, you didn't have music ever. Maybe you could sing a little bit. But Nevi'im had to have music around them because you know what music's like. Music relaxes you. Yeah, his bonus, absolutely. Music and meditation. You think of like listening to your favourite music and getting in the right mood. I suspect the music also has to be the right kind of music. There's some music just doesn't put you in this kind of state of mind, and some music does. The Haim of Vakshim Hanavu, and then they could ask for Navu. Vazehu Shenemah, the Haim of Mitnabim, that's what it says that these people were. They were trying to get Navu. And finally, the last one in number 9, okay. Elu Shehaim of Vakshim Lehitnabeh, those people who were trying to get Navu. Hey Nikram B'nei Nevi'im, they're called the children, the B'nei Nevi'im, the training Nevi'im. The Afal Pisha Mechav Nindatham, even if they get their mind in the right place. As we know, God can turn off the taps if he wants, and they may do it and they may not. So you see, Nevuah is not just some kind of thunderbolt from the sky. It is a whole process of personal self-development. And I just want to finish with this, which is, I think, another one of the reasons why the Rambam includes this as the sixth ikkar. What's the big deal? Why do I need so much to believe this? He doesn't include, like, Kedusha as one of the ikkarim, or Tahara. They're all important things, but they're not ikkarim. But Nevuah is an ikkar, to understand that there is a way that the human being can become connected and intermeshed with a spiritual reality through their own self-development. The Rambam is really putting the ball in our court very strongly. He's saying, if you're not a Navi, almost certainly the reason is because it's your fault. Why don't we have Naviim today for the Rambam? So it seems that because we're just in Golus, why can't we be a Navi outside Eretz Yisrael? Because the atmosphere outside Eretz Yisrael just lends itself to distraction, as you well know. If you ever spent a couple of weeks in New York and came back to the Midrash Rachel, you see the whole atmosphere is very different. How can you be a Navi on Fifth Avenue? You can't do this. Maybe in Colorado, maybe you could think about that. But, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, it's meant to be a way of connecting in. This is why, you know, shepherds and peace and quiet and stuff like that are conducive to Nevuah. Therefore, I think the Rambam is really calling on us to try and develop some of these qualities. Maybe we're not going to be Nevi'im, but as we say about the Jewish people, even if we're not Nevi'im, we can at least be B'nai Nevi'im. We can try to become Nevi'im. So that's all I want to say about Nevi'im. Next time, Be'ezrat Hashem, we're going to start the much more complicated and tricky business of what is Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah and what is Torah. Okay.